Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another wonderful episode of Glamour's Hey, It's Okay podcast. Today, we have an enormous amount of serious, important, and vital life issues to discuss on whether or not they're Hey, It's Okay. But thank God we have Douglas Booth here to help us. Today, we are talking online dating. We're talking adulting versus kidulting and a whole load of other things. I want to welcome today our entertainment editor, Helen Whittaker.
Hello.
And the wonderfully charming and ridiculously handsome actor, Douglas Booth. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for being here. I almost cancelled you, though. You know, yesterday I Googled you, as one does in the name of research.
Okay.
And I discovered that you were born on the day that I arrived in London for the very first time.
So 24 like, years ago?
I think it's a little bit longer than that, actually. So,
really? Yeah.
25 coming up, yeah, aren't we?
Okay. Yeah, I'm 25 on the 9th of July.
Quarter century, how does that feel?
Exciting.
Should we have a joint 25th birthday, 25th London anniversary
I'm up for it.
Party? I think we could get a good mix of people there.
Yeah, there'd be a good guest list.
Yes, well, especially from you. I'm sort of like just going to piggyback onto your fabulous context.
I've been to the Glamour Awards.
You have been to the Glamour Awards. You and I think Jamie Campbell-Bauer are my most favourite well-behaved guests. Just to explain, it's really hard, isn't it, Helen, to get people to sit down?
Yes,
it's like
it is.
Everybody complains if award shows go on too long, but nobody helps you to make the award show not go on too long by sitting down when you ask them to. Yeah. But I have noticed over the years that you and Jamie Douglas are the ones who do. You always sat down first.
So that's because I'm always hungry.
I think it's that.
I always want to eat the food on the table.
It's that good schoolboy upbringing, isn't it?
Well, because all the Glamour staff are told we have to go and sit down. So we spend a lot of time sitting on tables on our own,
looking
really stupid.
The world's
loneliest people.
Yeah.
And then whenever we see anyone else sit down, we're like, okay, everyone's coming now. And you and Jamie Campbell-Bauer did. Also, Kerry Washington.
Yep.
She was very well behaved as well, sat down.
So those three are always allowed back.
Thank you.
Are you coming? You'll be on stage though, won't you? June 6th.
I won't be. I think I'll be in New Orleans.
Oh,
but yeah.
Good excuse. What are you doing there?
I'm filming a movie. I'm not allowed to talk about it yet.
Oh
though.
Man!
But I'll be in New Orleans, eating wonderful American French food, and toasting to the Glamour Awards that I'll be very sad to miss.
Yes, good answer. So, but you are on stage at the moment, nightly, aren't
yes,
you?
Yes, I am on stage at the moment in Speech and Debate, a play which is on at the Trafalgar Studios 2, which is in Trafalgar Studios, which is Trafalgar Square in the West End, and it's my stage debut, so it's extremely exciting.
What the hell is that like, to get on stage for the first time? It's like, you know, it's so different, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a completely different medium. You know, acting on film is a director's and editor's medium. We come in as actors, we do our work, and then they edit you, and it's sort of on stage you're self-editing yourself. So you are it's just completely you for the whole hour and a half as the length of our play. But I love it. You get so much from the audience, which is also a challenge at the beginning. You have to try and you feed off the audience, but you've got to dislocate yourself from them because they act differently every night, and
That's the thing. How aware are you of the audience?
In our play, it's Trafalgar Studios 2 is very small, so it's really intimate. It's about 100 seats. So we can see everyone in the audience. So you are very connected to them, and you can sort of really pick up on their mood. So but I imagine if you're at the Old Vic or something, you're a bit more disconnected because you've got big lights and you can't really see them. But here we see everyone.
But God, what must that be like if, say, you've practiced, you're a really successful actor, it's your stage debut, it's the West End, it's amazing, and then you spot in the crowd someone, your arch nemesis from high school or something like that. Does anything like that ever happen?
Yeah, it definitely does. You just have to just crack on.
You don't want to do a sort of like break character in the middle and do a middle finger sort of like, look at me now.
No, it actually makes me just act better. It makes me, it means like, well, like, fair, and I'm going to be even better than I was yesterday.
Does that go for family and friends as well? Because I think it's worse to have people I know watching me do something.
Me too. Yeah.
I'd rather have loads of strangers.
I don't know. There's something about having people that you love in that gives you that extra bit of pep in your step and gives you another reason to go at it hammer and tongs the next night, because you're doing it over and over and over.
That's
again
true.
You've got to stay motivated.
Have you had anyone's phone go off in the theatre yet? Because you walked in here and immediately turned your phone onto flight mode.
See,
which was
he's
very good of you.
A good polite
but
boy.
I think people don't remember to do that in the theatre.
We have had one phone, a few people eating popcorn, but actually it's such an intimate space that you really are just wrapped up in the actions instantaneously. You're only a meter, 2, 3, 4 meters at max away from me. So I think you really would turn it off.
It
watches
depends.
Actually, that beep, yeah. beep, that weird watch is the thing that actually happens the most.
Really?
Yeah, and whatever that is.
Speech and debate, it's, I think it depends as well on the play, doesn't it? If you're sort of like going to see some really heavy sort of like Schindler's Listy thing,
yeah.
then, you know, really, you need a punch in the face if your phone goes off. But I think yours is like a dark
comedy.
Yeah.
So our play is extremely funny. But it's about kind of some serious issues. It's about three misfit teenagers in Salem, Oregon, who bandy together to bring down a sexual predator in their high school. But no one really takes them seriously until they speak out with hilarious consequences. And it deals with online privacy, homophobia, things that matter to kids, like getting the lead in the school play. but it's extremely funny. And it kind of, like, Denise Goff was in on Saturday, and she said she hasn't laughed so much in a theatre in a very long time.
Which is amazing to say that about a play about sexual predators.
Yeah, no,
it's amazing.
That's the thing. It's looking that all of that plot is sort of window dressing to just looking at three adolescents in this no man's land that is that space between being a kid and being a grown up and trying to negotiate what that is while you're just surrounded by condescending adults that don't quite understand you. Yeah.
I'm going to try hard not to be one of those condescending adults as my daughter ages, but it's hard, isn't it?
I suppose it is a little hard. But Stephen Karam, the writer, writes really intelligently. Like, he just won a Tony for The Humans for Best New Play last year. And his writing is so witty and quick and funny, but also meaningful and moving at the same time. So it's a really nice package.
Are you enjoying your American accent?
I really am enjoying the American accent.
I keep hearing it's very on point.
It's fun to do a different accent. It's just another string to your bow to take your character one step further away from who you are as a person. So it's an extra tool, as it were.
I'm always fascinated because I think we all fantasize about such a glamorous career, isn't it? Sort of like acting and making films and being on stage. But I think you've got to be a really special kind of person to be able to push aside all that self-consciousness, particularly in front of a live audience. Where did that come from in you?
I'm severely dyslexic, so I struggled with my academic work at school, and it just pushed me into more of a creative field and made that part of my brain probably grow a bit bigger. And
I felt
it's where I felt most confident, weirdly, if I could feel like I could express myself, I could be whoever I wanted to be. You weren't pigeonholed in one thing. I wanted to be this person today and this person tomorrow. And it just kind of helps you almost find yourself in a weird way, being able to sort of play these characters and play these roles and also kind of know that in your lifetime, you won't have to just settle for one thing. You can be a thousand different people in one lifetime, which is kind of cool.
So that must be so inspiring for other kids who have been dyslexic? Do you do any sort of like work in that area? Do you talk to kids about that sort of thing?
I haven't done work with dyslexic kids. It's a good idea. I've done a bunch of other things, but I haven't spoken to dyslexic kids. I'm not sure what the platform there is out there. I mean, I've worked with the Prince's Trust, who work with sort of disadvantaged children, but not dyslexic specifically. Mm. But I think, but even now, it's so much better known and understood. I mean, I think even I was lucky. Even when I was a kid, I had a great amount of support, and I had all these like funky glasses, like these pink, I had pink lenses to try and help me read. And but I think, but back in in previous generations, I'm sure my dad was dyslexic, and people didn't understand what it was. They just thought your brain thinks in a different way, and people didn't really get that then. So, but no, maybe I should think about that, starting some sort of dyslexic charity.
But it's obviously your destiny to end up where you are.
Exactly. Yes. Well, maybe.
And it's on till April 22, the play?
No, it's on to April 1st. There's only
Hurry, everyone.
We're halfway through the run, if you really want to see it. Also, if you are a student, there are £10 tickets on... They've released some £10 tickets on Thursday matinee. So if you're not in a lecture or something, come along. It's because I think it's really important to open up theatre to people that couldn't necessarily... see it or afford it, or so that's kind of exciting. But we're open to the 1st of April, and I'd love to see you down. It's a really intimate, fun experience, and if I was going to sum up the play in one word, it would just be joy. You leave smiling.
Oh, we could do with some joy.
We need more of that.
We're Helen and I both jumping on the joy there. Yeah. We're there. Sold. So, Douglas, have you ever been to the features meeting of any women's magazines before?
No, I can't say I have.
Weird. Okay, so this may well be useful to you in your further career.
Fantastic.
This is what we do. Glamour features meetings always descend into furious debates about anything from serious to really stupid, and that's what we kind of bring to this podcast, so that's what we're going to do now. We're going to talk about online dating and whether or not it is okay to just hate all forms of online dating. Now, I've never done any online dating. I've been married for 3,000 years before computers were invented, let alone television or the internet. So I've never done it, and I hate it. So I don't know. What about people who are well into it?
Well, I did hate online dating, but I do have online dating to thank for meeting my husband.
I was going to say, you met your husband through online dating.
Wow, yes, but not directly. So this is my weird thing. I had done online dating and got fed up with it, hated it, the whole kind of sort of table tennis match of people sending emails, never meeting up with each other, or going on dates that felt like job interviews. Mm-hmm. And I was like, done, over it, log off, not interested. Meanwhile, my best friend took a deep breath and thought, I'm going back out there, I'm getting back on the website. And she did, and she met a guy through online dating, and I married his best friend. So if they hadn't met through online dating, I would never have met my husband. They're still together as well and have a baby.
And is that your best friend?
My best friend and his best friend.
How amazing. That's what must have really cozy weekends.
Yeah, it sort of feels like the kind of thing when you're 12, you're like, we'll marry best friends and we'll see loads of each other forever. And we did. So I joke now that I owe her £42 of her membership fee from Guardian Soulmates, because I have that to thank for meeting my husband.
A lot of people have success on Guardian Soulmates.
I was going to say, you probably have more success on Guardian Soulmates than you do on sort of Tinder or...
It depends what you're after, doesn't it? It depends. Yeah. From what I understand, it's what market you're up for. I think Guardian Soulmates is more, I want my soulmate.
But it is, but none of them watch TV. That's the thing that I really had a problem with. There's so many people on that website seem to be, I want to meet this person, I want to partner in crime. Classic online dating line. But I don't watch much TV, so I don't own a TV. And you're like, but you probably own Netflix on your iPad, so... And I watch loads of TV.
I just want to go back. Right. What is a partner in crime? Have you got a partner in crime?
I'm very lucky I can say that I do now.
What does it mean?
It means that you have a teammate.
Okay.
You have someone that you can just...
What
have
crimes
a love.
Are you committing? Where did this saying come from? I need answers.
Filthy crimes.
I think it's meant to be shorthand for sort of japes. You're up for a laugh.
Oh, I like a jape.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. But it's one of those lines that everyone always uses on online dating sites. And plus, everyone always feels the need to justify why they're on there. My life is great and full and happy and I have all this stuff going on, but I'm now looking for a partner in crime.
Wasn't there like a thing about guys just posing with tigers on Tinder? Did you hear about that?
It sounds very Russian.
Yeah, like so lots of the guys always have the same sort of set of pictures. One's like when they were in Thailand, like posing next to a tiger to show how masculine they were and how they... and not scared to be
alive
standing next to a drugged
though.
Tiger. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's not like they've been on hunting trips.
No.
Okay, no, that's weird.
But no, I've never been on a want any of those sites because it's a bit difficult.
I mean, look at him. Well, he doesn't need to go on any site. You just stick your head out the window.
You say that before I met my girlfriend. I was single for over 2 years. It's not always as easy as one would think to meet people. So I actually think that the dating apps are a really good thing because I think that it opens. It's a good way for people to meet people.
I would also say, poor Douglas. I know you're not on any dating apps, but I absolutely guarantee there's someone out there who has nicked your photo off Google and is pretending to be you on a dating app.
There's a fake Tinder profile of me out there. I don't know if it's still there, but I was in San Francisco a couple of years ago and a guy I know just through work emailed me and said, I've just come across you on Tinder. Is there anything I need to know? I don't know whether to swipe right or left. I was like, sort of like jet lag haze, went to bed and forgot about it. And then 3 days later, there was a Tinder profile with my editor's letter picture.
But what do they do?
I didn't even know what to do about it. It's not me. I don't know.
I think they probably just use it to attract attractive people.
But then what do they do when they try and send pictures?
Good luck with that with my picture. I mean,
Your name's out there, your face is out there.
Oh my God. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I have very little hope for the person pretending to be me on Tinder. But
I don't know about that.
Bless you. But the only other thing, I really respect people who, and I know somebody who was so downhearted after a breakup and went into online dating as a project, like the way that I would maybe take 2 weeks off and if I needed to buy a house as a project. I was like, I am going to find that guy who I'm going to marry. And she did do it. And they're very, very happily married. They have 2 children. I'm really in awe and really admire it. But there's a bit of me, I'm kind of sad that that's... does now seem to be everybody's meet cute story.
How did people used to meet?
Yeah.
Drunk in the pub.
Yeah.
Drunk. I mean, you know, people used to have fantastic coincidences. I know a girl who got off a bus 2 stops short to go to a Sainsbury's. The Sainsbury's was closed. There was a guy standing out who said, well, I could take you to dinner. And she said, what's your name? And he said, John. And she said, oh, and she was thinking, a clairvoyant told me 2 years ago, if John asks you to dinner. Yeah. To go out with him and now they're married. You know, is that, and that doesn't happen anymore.
I think it does. I think 50-50 between my friends of meeting in real life and meeting online. Because I still have friends who, my friend's sister met her boyfriend when they shared a cab during a tube strike.
That's cute.
That's an in real life story. Yeah. And then there are people who, you know, they log on, they meet someone, they kind of dip in and out. They don't stop trying to meet people in real life. It's just sort of... a project on the side.
I do also think it has blown up that whole thing of people always thinking there's something else. Yeah. You know, there's always another option to swipe.
Yes.
Right? I think people forever perpetually keep their options open now rather than invest in the person in front of them.
And I think it does facilitate the type of person who is going to mess you around as well, because they can do that thing where they go, hey, they just send endless emails. They have no intention of meeting up with you. I had this. I was like, dude, I don't want a pen pal. Are we actually going to go for a drink or not? But then there are, you've got to filter through. It's like real life. If you go into a pub and there's 50 guys or girls in there, you're probably going to be attracted to a small percentage of them.
So after a long period of singledom, how did you meet your significant other?
I work with them. So through work.
See, that's what happens with actors as well. You know, all these gorgeous looking people thrown together for months at a time.
So that's the great and the bad thing is that you meet lots of beautiful people, but then you know, sometimes relationships don't last as long. But I think if you find the right person, then it could last.
Well, goosebumps all around.
Yeah.
I wish you luck with that, Douglas.
Thank you very much.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Online dating, we think it's, you know, sometimes good and sometimes bad. We've really, really sewed up that whole package. It's the law now. Do what you want, people. Next up, we're going to talk about crying, Douglas. Is it okay to schedule a cry? I've heard that this is a thing.
I think it's really good to be able to cry, and I think it's really important for guys.
For actors.
Yeah, exactly.
But also
just
demand.
Yeah. But just in real life, I think it's really important for guys to grow up knowing that it is totally okay to cry. I think it's we're entering a new wave of masculinity and what is and gender equality, which I think is really important. I've never scheduled a cry, but I think maybe that is a good idea. I think being in touch with your emotions and not bottling things up is really important and will sort of lead us to a much happier, safer, fairer world.
I think my scheduling a cry is scheduling a kickboxing session. That's how I get it out. Yeah.
Or crying through pain or crying through... Or
just the adrenaline and exertion of that when I can't think about anything else and I sort of like tend to channel frustration that way. I don't like crying.
No.
So I'm not going to plan it. I don't know how I would plan it.
You really actually actively don't like crying?
No, I don't, because
I'm like that with vomiting.
Vomiting.
I haven't vomited
in years. Like I really hate it.
When you get migraines as much as I do, you have to make your peace with it.
Yeah.
But it's always associated with extreme. I only cry if I am incredibly sad. Or the other thing that's really frustrating for me is it's a symptom, a physical symptom of extreme anger. So if I'm in a situation where I've run out of ways to express myself in a rage, it comes out my eyes. And that's really embarrassing because it tends to happen at moments when you're trying to be powerful in some way. So I associate it with, I've got no problem with, I'm not down on it as an emotion, but it's not an enjoyable one at all for me.
I'm just not much of a crier.
Yeah.
I'm kind of a stoic northerner. No, I just don't cry that much. So the idea of scheduling a time, it'd be more like it would just burst out at a moment that I don't really want it to.
Yeah.
But on the note of scheduling a cry, from office chat, this is actually a thing, especially when hungover, apparently, to sort of cry through the misery and to get through the other side. But also from our website, glamour.com, we have a gallery of sad movies, which has got about 50 or 60 different films in there. And
what kind of things would we see in these films?
So it could be, anything that makes you emotional, anything with a sad ending, or, it could be Schindler's List.
I can't get through describing the plot of Inside Out, the Pixar animation, without crying.
Marley and me, that sort of thing. And every weekend on a Saturday and Sunday, that gallery is one of the top performing things on our website, which leads me to believe that a lot of people are looking for something to sort of get them going and maybe they're ready to feel a bit sad.
Oh, glamour gang, come on. let's channel that energy into, finding a laugh on the internet.
Yeah.
Just look at The Wheels Baby with the BBC.
I guess if you're in the right mood, sometimes just seeing a lovely little kitten might make you weep a bit as well.
The thing is that I don't tie crying to sadness necessarily.
Right.
I mean, of course, that is a result of sadness. But I think crying for me is being in touch with your emotions, whether it be, whether you're feeling compassionate or whether you're feeling frustrated or distraught about something. Sadness is more of a mute feeling for me. Do you know what I mean? I rarely cry because I'm sad.
Right.
I cry because I feel. Do you know what I mean? Which for me feels more like an alive, feeling alive. Like it's an alive emotion. I feel like switched on emotionally, which makes me feel sort of connected.
It's so interesting you saying that because you're absolutely right. We are entering sort of like a new phase of the way gender is defined and masculinity and femininity. And I think historically for so long, women crying, it does feel like a loss of your power in a lot of ways, whereas perhaps it's changing for men where it feels like it's a more empowering thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we're all completely messed up by gender roles and stereotypes.
But hopefully somewhere we'll meet in the middle in a happy sort of
we'll have a group equilibrium.
Okay, so for those people who want to schedule a cry, and we're totally down with that, give us some acting tips. What if you need to cry, what do you do?
People work in very different ways. You know, like I work with Jennifer Connelly, where she, you know, she's had headphones in, so I presume she's listening to music and looking at pictures of her kids and something, which I imagine instantly takes her to a certain place. Some people use tear sticks, but I don't know. It's all about, for me, just having to be present in the moment. And as long as you are present in the moment of whatever you're doing and in your character, hopefully you'll get to that emotional peak. And it's also understanding that crying isn't the peak of an emotion in a scene. If you go, well, I'm not conveying this emotion unless I get there and I cry. And actually, your quest to try and cry undermines what you're actually trying to achieve. And if you actually just play the truth of the scene,
wow,
then you will eventually get there if it's right. And if it's not, then actually maybe it's more powerful. The most powerful thing in actually, if you watch a movie, often is when people are trying not to cry,
yes,
and not the actual tears. It's like someone that's trying to hold that in. That actually is. That is a more emotive for an audience member, I think.
Interesting. If I'm going to schedule a cry, Helen, I might just get you to punch me in the face later. That's all I can think of to make it happen.
Can we clear it with HR first?
If you're enjoying Glamour, Hey, It's Okay, and thank you, we know that so many more of you do each week, then please do stop by and subscribe on iTunes. It's free. It costs you naught. It gives so much. And if you leave a review, we may reward you with a little shout out on this podcast and even a little present. We are absolutely loving reading your reviews, so please keep them coming in. Emily XX couldn't love you more for the new catchphrase for The Office. She says, I love, love, love the podcast. No topic is too trivial or too big for the Glamour Gang to tackle, and an episode is guaranteed to have me in stitches at one point or another. Does it make you crazy if you engage in heated discussions with your car audio system? Absolutely not. I've been there. I definitely have a deep love for James, wait for it, the pod cupboard stud too, as do so many of the listeners. And don't worry, everybody, I'm getting tea towels, mugs, t-shirts, the lot made with pod cupboard stud on it, ready for you.
Thank you so much for your comment. And if you could possibly just email in to glamourheyitsok@condenast.co.uk, then Emily, we will get you out your prize.
Get ready to solve this one for me. Is it okay to never really feel like a grown-up? I'm going to say yes.
Yes.
End of discussion.
Yes, no. I agree. Do you ever really feel like a grown-up?
Okay, well, let's do our ages. Douglas, 24?
I'm 24.
Helen?
36.
47. Oh, my God. So, no, I still don't feel like a grown-up. And nothing is guaranteed to make you feel less of a grown-up than when you've got a little person looking at you, expecting you to make grown-up important decisions, and then you really know how much you don't know about anything.
I agree. My child is 13 months old, and I thought, oh, having a baby, that's a real grown-up moment. And you just realise your own parents were totally winging it every time you thought everything's going to be fine because mummy's here or daddy's here.
Yeah.
And now you have to convey that same sense of security and safety to them whilst thinking, oh my God, I hope this is going to be okay in the end.
So if we don't feel like a grown-up, how do you feel, Douglas?
I know, it's that thing when you grow up, and you're right, you think that everything stops with your parents. You think they must be, they must know everything. And then you get to that age where you suddenly think, actually, they don't know everything. I know more than you.
My dad's just a dude making it up as he goes along.
But I do feel that having, you know, being 24 now and just sort of come into my mid-20s, that I have grown up a lot. And I think there is something to be said about sort of figuring out who you are into your sort of early adulthood, and sort of finding like a stability and finding yourself and a grounding and a life for yourself. Because the teenage years and your being a child and teenage years are so sort of all over the place. But when you finally do find that kind of bit of stability, I think it creates a great platform to then blossom. And I imagine from here on out, nothing really much will change. I'm still going to want to be doing all the things that I'm doing now.
But you must have matured in so many ways, probably differently to Helen and I. We have the same sort of peer group that we came through our careers. And, you know, you were, what, 18 and working with Donald Sutherland and people like that. So you've always been exposed to different generations, probably in a way.
I started working when I was 16. You know, I remember when I was 16 being out in Budapest, like everyone else was at school and I was in Budapest sort of, I remember drinking a double vodka on the rocks in a Budapest bar with Eddie Redmayne, Hayley Atwell, and like Rufus Sewell, and they were like, just like, who's this 16-year-old? Yeah. But no, so I had to grow up a little quickly, but it was sad to kind of miss out on certain things from school, but also really nice. I got to learn from other people. You know, you get to work with, you know, amazing actors and learn from great people. Like my first job was with Maggie Smith and Timothy Spall when I was 16, and to work with Stephen Karam on this play, who's a Tony Award-winning writer, and to sit down and do table work with him. It's like being going to the most amazing university of life, or learning to be a blacksmith on Great Expectations and going to a forge and doing that. So, I think I'm probably always going to be a child. But
me too. But I mean, you know, obviously it's great to have a child to take to things like a Little Mix concert or a Taylor Swift concert or whatever, but I'm loving it. I'm so excited to be there. And is that all right? It's all right, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you're not going to be the surly person just sitting at the front and kind of, I mean, at least you're actually enjoying it. My poor dad had to take me to see Jason Donovan when I was seven.
Well, I was going to say, and at least I'm not that old dude who was at Taylor Swift, I could see talking to lots of young girls and them just sort of like sliding away.
Was he not there with a child?
No. And so my friend Lorraine and I were like, we better keep our eye on that one.
Yeah.
But so I'm not that person. But, you know, there's lots of childish things that I still really like doing.
But I think that's not being a grown-up. I think you don't have the joy sapped out of you as you get older. And I don't think you should have the joy sapped out of you as you get older. I think
that's the youthful image of being a grown-up, isn't it?
But what is the definition of being a grown-up? What defines being grown-up? What does that even mean?
I think it's actually just accepting that you are a bit crap as opposed to trying to fight against it.
And just, I remember things like lying in bed the first time I took my baby girl home and hearing her crying. And I think I must have been dreaming that I was on an aeroplane. And I remember half asleep thinking, oh man, I wish someone had shut that baby up. And then I remembered it was my baby and I had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and do it. It's moments like that you're like, oh my God, this is for real. I'm a proper adult now. But
I couldn't believe they let us go home from the hospital without anyone stopping us going out the door with the baby.
But I balance it with, you know, my unironic love for Buffy the Vampire Slayer marathons.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's like, I don't know, what's your sort of like most young at heart, kid at heart thing that you think that you enjoy?
I don't know, just still running around carelessly with my friends, you know.
You can have a legal drink now, so there's that.
You can have a legal drink. But no, I think just I'm fortunate enough to kind of work part-time being an actor, so you work really intensely and then have months off. So I still sort of enjoy that feeling of that summer holiday in the summer if you have months off and just carefree and run around and cycle everywhere and just drink beer in the park and play music from speakers and just get rowdy and have a, you know.
And that's it. And you say, no, when I was in Budapest when I was 16 and you might have missed out on things your friends were doing, they were drinking vodka, but just in a park with other people. You were with Rufus Sewell.
There was definitely times where I've definitely done my fair share of drinking, like, Tesco's own vodka from a paper bag in a park.
Don't we all miss that glamour?
Yeah.
I remember doing that, and this is one thing I don't miss from my youth, is, you know, going to the cinema with my friends and sneaking in cans of ready-mixed vodka and sort of like downing it all before we went into the film and thinking that that was like the most rock and roll grown-up thing that we could do.
Yeah.
I'm glad I've matured in some ways. Thank you very much for listening. I want to thank so much my wonderful guests today, Helen Whittaker.
Goodbye.
And Douglas Booth, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much.
Righting all our wrongs.
I don't know about that.
Cannot wait to come and see you in Speech and Debate. It's until April 1.
1st of April.
Yes, April Fool's Day. We will read nothing into that.
Yeah.
But looking forward to seeing it. And there are discounts for students, as Douglas said, so look into that.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.